Chapter 5 "I don't understand," Kate said, squinting as she looked up into the morning sunlight. "This can't be where the treasure map leads." Above them loomed the wrought iron latticework of one of the most recognizable landmarks in the world, over 1,000 feet tall, for a time the tallest building in the world, still considered by many native Parisians as a colossal eyesore, the Eiffel Tower. Nick was squinting into the same sunlight. "It's worth a shot," he said. They had checked into a hotel on Avenue de Suffren and gotten what felt like 1 hour of sleep. Now they were out on the street, a half block away from the entrance to the tower. It would officially open in 5 more minutes. "Do you think he'll be here today?" Kate asked. "Every day he waits, it increases the risk that someone catches up to him. We should tell the Interpol office here in Paris that Quentin might show up. They can help us watch." "It's one tower," Nick said. "We can handle it. I don't want my dad to run again. I need to talk to him, find out what's really going on." "Okay," Kate said. "You're on lead." Nick and Kate stationed themselves at opposite sides of the Champ de Mars. Nick had to be careful about hiding his face, but Quentin Fox had never seen Kate before. The tourists lined up to take the first lift rides. The traffic increased throughout the morning. It was a perfect day, sunny, not too hot. What a great day to be in Paris, Kate thought. If only I wasn't about to get chewed out by my boss for disobeying a direct order. They took turns spelling each other for food and bathroom breaks. The noon hour hit. More lunch vendors came out to sell food from their carts. There was no sign of Quentin Fox. Another hour passed, then another. Nick was beginning to have doubts, until he finally saw his father. Nick called Kate on her cell phone and they watched Quentin board one of the lower lifts. Nick followed on another of the lower lifts, which rose at an increasingly steep angle on the tower's pedestals to the intermediate level. Nick spotted his father boarding one of the two upper lifts, which would take him all the way up to the top. Nick caught the next car. When Nick arrived at the top platform, he scanned the crowd and located his father, the only one not looking out at the city. Instead, Quentin was studying the structure immediately above him like he was trying to work out some kind of engineering problem in his head. Nick approached him, stopping when he was next to him. He looked out over the city below. It was an impressive view. "You didn't bring your parachute this time," Nick said. Quentin Fox didn't move. "You need to turn around," he said in a dead, calm voice. "Get in that lift and go back down. Is anyone else here with you?" Nick felt his phone buzzing in his pocket. He ignored it. "I'm alone. Nick, you have to listen to me. You have no idea what's going on here." Quentin was still facing ahead and hadn't yet looked Nick in the eye. "You're after the Raubgold. I don't know why, but I do know there are other parties after it. Dangerous people. They'll kill you over this treasure. Or worse." His phone continued to vibrate. Quentin turned to face Nick. "I know. You have to trust me. I spent the better part of my life protecting you. I know you're a grown man now, capable of leading your own life. But I can't stop being your dad. You don't want to get involved in this." The next lift opened. Two armed members of the Préfecture de Police de Paris came out, followed by Kate. Kate went to stand by Nick, and together they watched as the cuffs were snapped onto Quentin's wrists. The look on his father's face burned in Nick's mind as he was taken away. They took Quentin Fox to the nearest police station on Place Louis-le-Pen. He sat alone on a hard wooden bench in the holding cell. It wasn't his first time behind bars. There had been that one night in Kiev, another night in Athens. On both occasions, all he had to do was wait for his CIA contact to find out about his arrest, then make whatever quiet arrangements were necessary for him to be sprung. Today, there was nobody to call. The sound of a door opening jarred him from his reverie. He looked up to see his son standing on the other side of the bars. Next to him was the woman who had been at the tower. "This is Kate O'Hare," Nick said. She's an FBI agent. Quentin stood up. It's nice to see you again. If you don't mind me saying so, you're a lot more attractive than most of the FBI agents I've come across. I'm afraid there isn't anything I can do to help you, Mr. Fox, Kate said. You'll be going back to Rome tomorrow. I understand. How do you know Nick, anyway? Nick and Kate looked at each other. It's a long story, Nick said. I'm sorry, I won't have time for it, Quentin said. Could you give us a minute? Nick asked Kate. Sure, Kate said. She turned to Quentin. I'm glad nobody was hurt today, Mr. Fox. Good luck with whatever happens next. Quentin smiled as he watched her leave. I may not get to see you again, Nick said. You need to trust me and tell me what's going on. What were you doing in London? Captain Duckworth was helping me. He's the one who trained me to jump and modified that chute for me. I remember when he came to visit us, Nick said. That's how I found you. Quentin smiled. He's hard to forget. Do you work for the SAS too? Let's just say I helped some people coordinate things with them. That pub you tailed me to was the old safe house we all used to exchange back-channel information. If you aren't moonlighting for the CIA anymore, and you aren't SAS, why are you looking for the Raubgold? According to Interpol's intel, there's dark web chatter about the Brotherhood hiring you. Tell me that's not right. Quentin came closer to the bars, looked his son in the eye. It's half right. They contacted an identity I used to maintain, a certain kind of art dealer with a lot of contacts in the museum world. As soon as I found out who they really were, what they stand for, I realized I had to go in a different direction. Did you try calling your old buddies at the CIA? Yes, but I was never officially on the books at the agency, and everyone I knew there is gone. A bunch of kids there now, and as soon as I started talking about Raubgold, I could practically hear them laughing. So you decided to steal the map yourself? I didn't see another choice, Quentin said. This gold needs to go back to the people who rightly own it. Or at least something good has to be done with it. If I didn't try to make that happen, I would have regretted it for the rest of my life. Nick shook his head. Can you imagine what Mom would say if she could see us now? I think she'd tell you to help me. Are you serious? The two foxes, working together, Quentin said. Why not? Nick gestured to the bars Quentin was standing behind. Not going to happen now. Maybe not, Quentin said. But then I'm not on a plane to Rome yet. The two men looked at each other for one more long moment. Neither man knew what else to say. The officer opened the door and poked his head in. It is time, sir. Nick went up to the bars. Quentin stretched out a hand, and Nick took it. Goodbye, Dad, Nick said. No touch, please, the officer said. Nick put up both hands. Sorry. Thanks for coming to see me, Quentin said. Nick nodded. Good luck, he said, following the officer through the door. Just after 2 a.m, Nick Fox walked back and forth on Place Louis-Lépine. The vehicle traffic was light and the foot traffic practically non-existent. The bars and the nightlife were several blocks away. Finally, at 2:15 a.m., a single figure emerged from the alley that ran alongside the building. Took you long enough, Nick said. Quentin gave him back the tools Nick had slipped into Quentin's hand when he had reached through the bars to say goodbye. Do you always carry lockpicks with you? Like I said, it's a long story. Well, next time bring me a good old-fashioned hook pick instead, and a tension bar with actual tension on it. Noted, Nick said. Now let's get off the street. On the top floor of the hotel on Avenue du Suffren, Kate O'Hare was sleeping soundly. On the empty pillow next to her was a box with chocolates from Pierre Marcolini, plus a handwritten note from Nick Fox, apologizing for ditching her again.